how the coverage works. As I mentioned earlier, or alluded to, these laws apply to anyone with fewer than 500 employees. When the laws were first coming out, we're really confused. Why are they targeting smaller employers? And then as the refundable tax credit surfaced, as we digested the law, it became clear what Congress is saying is, we're willing to pick up this tab for employers of less than 500 employees, but not employers of more than 500 employees. Within that coverage model of fewer than 500, and you can go to the paper for some detailed discussion about, well, how do I count those employees? What if I have a subsidiary? What if some of them are part-time? What if some of them are leased to me? There are rules for all of it. I'm not going to talk about them here. I will call out the small business exemption. If you have fewer than 50 employees, then an appropriate officer can make a determination that they're willing to certify to that one of these three things is met, which is a high level. If I give this leave, my liabilities are going to exceed my revenue, or it's going to threaten the business because of the knowledge and skill of the person on leave, or it's going to just mean I don't have enough people to function. And so if the viability of the business would be threatened by compliance, and I have fewer than 50 employees, I can actually take myself out of coverage. I still have to give the notice, but I'm technically not covered by the law. The DOL has been very clear. They do not want you to submit this determination to them. They want you to have it on file. And I imagine where it will come up is in the event of an enforcement action by DOL, if someone disagrees with you, or if there's litigation. Continuing on at a pretty good clip, EPSLA, who's eligible, the paid sick leave, everybody's eligible. So day one of hire, the employee is eligible for paid sick leave. EFMLA, you have to have at least 30 days of service. And as with anything else under the FMLA, there are rules for how you count that 30 days. We don't need to go into it here. But otherwise, these two laws cover virtually every single person you employ, including part-time employees, which, again, the expectation of how much time you're going to get is simply prorated. Two big exceptions to that. Employers are allowed to exclude healthcare providers and emergency responders, and the regs give some definitions of those terms. And the OMB is entitled to exclude certain federal employees. If you're working for a federal agency, there are some mechanics around which titles of the FMLA actually apply to federal employees and which titles the EFMLA actually extended and amended. So that's why you'll see a difference in which federal employees can actually get EFMLA. Not all federal employees can. And on top of that, the OMB retains the right to exclude people. So then we get to the meat, and I'm going to pause for a second. So to recap, paid sick leave up to 80 hours total, prorated for part-time employees, really for all employees if you work for somebody with fewer than 500 employees. There's an exclusion for employers with less than 50, but that's the broad statement of the rule. When you pivot to FMLA, EFMLA, it's the same thing. It's all employers with fewer than 500. There's this exemption for people with fewer than 50. And the employees who are eligible is every single employee who has at least 30 days of service. So if you take it at just broad strokes, that's what we're talking about. Then we get into the real grist of it, which is, what is the trigger? What gets me the time off? And this was probably the biggest change if you were following the laws as they were being drafted versus what actually passed it. This was the big change. When you look at paid sick leave, there are six triggers. One of those, number six, is a catch-all designed to allow future flexibility, saying we don't want to have to pass another law. We're just going to say, anything else that HHS specifies that is similar to the stuff we're talking about is also a trigger. And right now, there isn't anything else. Those five triggers include trigger number five, which is any school or place of care closure or childcare unavailability. And that is the language the statute uses. They differentiate between school or place of care closure versus childcare unavailability. I don't know that there's a meaningful distinction there, but I tried to maintain that wording throughout the PowerPoint and throughout the paper because that's how they wrote the statute and the regs. And so that may end up being meaningful at some point. That trigger for paid sick leave, number five, is the only trigger for EFMLA. So if you look at it, really, if you need to take care of a child whose place of care or school or childcare is closed or unavailable, that gets you both paid sick leave and EFMLA. If you're talking about anything else, the only thing on the table is paid sick leave, because really there is only one trigger for EFMLA. On that one trigger, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this later, there's an additional requirement that there be no one else available to care for the child. And so in addition to there being a closed school, in addition to it being your child, in addition to you needing to be there to provide care for this child who can't go to school, their place of care, or their normal child care, there's a further requirement that there is no one else available to take care of the child. And, you know, we'd have no other guidance really other than those words. But it's clear what the concern was, is remember that in the end, what Congress is sometimes banking on is there's an incentive on the part of the employer to go one way, perhaps, and an incentive on the employee to go the other, and then we kind of meet in the middle. Here at a certain level, because all of this time off that's paid for is refundable in the form of a tax credit. Keep in mind, a refundable tax credit means you get the money back if the credit exceeds the liability. There could be an incentive for employers and employees to align. If you were an employer, for example, who didn't have enough work, but you had very talented people that you wanted to keep around and help out, and candidly, the vast majority of my clients are calling about how can I help keep my people employed with enough money to make rent as we get through this, because I'm going to need them when we come out the other side. It's not them trying to figure out how they can stick it to them. It's them trying to figure out, how do I help?